So this is my first poem. It's called October, 7-11, 3 a.m. It was published on Microsoft Word, and you can see it on my desktop. All right, so here we go. A man walks into a gas station. His jeans are covered in dirt. There's a young lady working the register. He walks up and says, "Holy shit, it's a late night. Been driving around all over the goddamn place doing this, doing that. But look at you. You look interesting. You got that Java blood. I can tell. You get it. You get it, young lady. I see it in your stoned eyes. It's like someone stuck you in a washing machine full of bong water. Are you still in school? What do they teach you in school these days? Do they have those computer chalkboards yet? You know, those future screens. Those big glowing computer screens in front of the class. Do they have those yet? In my day, the nuns wrote on chalkboards. I had to take the chalkboard erasers outside after lunch and smack them together like cymbals, bang all that white chalk powder out. One time, this teacher had me and this girl, Amy, come up to the chalkboard in front of the class and work out some mathematical equations. I didn't take it seriously. Instead, I made Amy laugh, whispering to her. She had tits. First girl to have them in our class at the time. She snorted laughter, and the teacher ran up to my back and ran her knuckle down my spine. Hurt like hell. Then she swung me into a corner, pulled her mutant face close to my young eyes. I don't remember what she said. I just remember big rat teeth, thick glasses that made her eyes all googly, skin on her cheeks blazing red, steaming with anger. Spittle shot out of her yellowed teeth, landed on my lip. I almost barfed. She had huge tits. I wonder if anyone have ever touched them. She seemed sad and unhappy. Anyway, I'll have a pack of Marlboro Reds and $10 on pump 3. Thanks a lot, be good, and stay in school. Thank you. I don't know I'm not prepared tonight, so let me just flip around here for a second. This is what you get when you get a drunken poet as the last thing. All right, here we go. I'll just go with this. As Chris said, and by the way, thank you, Chris, thank you, Jimmy, and thank you, Joan. Yes. This is a moment in the life of an accidental social worker. About 3 years ago, I was standing in an apartment in McKees Rocks, Pittsburgh, above a shitty pizza shop. To call this place an apartment is not doing it justice. It was not an apartment. It was an upstairs area above a pizza shop. It was three rooms and a bathroom down the hall. Each room was an apartment. One of the apartments didn't have a door, just a curtain. It was sheer. And through the sheer fabric, I could see a group of about 5 20-something smoking crack. Now, I never smoked crack myself, but I have been in rooms where people have smoked it. It's the worst smell, and the cloud of smoke from crack is like smoke from burning rubber or plastic. So before I was a social worker, growing up in the North Side, I was already familiar with crack and crack smokers. I had to pass this doorway to get to my client. I had my bag with papers in it. I was wearing my work clothes. The crack smokers asked me for something, a lighter, a cigarette, something. I really can't remember. I just gave them a vague response that summed up to no and stay in your room, fuck off. No, the guy I was seeing was severely fucked in the head. Heard voices, popped pills. He walked around his small room apartment barefoot. And his feet were dry and red, and his toenails were long and brown like demon teeth. And even though the bathroom was right next to his room, see, they all shared the same bathroom, he was too lazy to walk to it. So he pissed in empty milk jugs, and he had them placed around his room. He was smelly. His teeth were shit. His eyes were beady. So you may find it strange that this man was actually very likable. In fact, he was a sweetheart. I had a soft spot for him. He had many delusions involving Jesus. And once in a bar, he went in talking about how much he loved Jesus. And the people didn't like it, so they dragged him outside and kicked his head in. And he was already crazy to begin with. But getting kicked in the head, well, it made him even more detached. I never wanted to sit or touch anything in his place, and I didn't. I just made sure he was alive. I just filled out the proper paperwork. I just wondered why I was there. A kid from the north side with not much higher education, working retail while going to community college, somehow is standing in this hellhole with this poor, deranged man trying to help him out, funded by the state, a social worker. I couldn't help him out, by the way. He was gone. I knew this straight away. I knew the only way I could help him was to simply listen, to look at him not as a freak, but as a human. That's it. Somehow this involves a lot of redundant paperwork and politics. But, and my boss can back me up on this, I never put much effort into the paperwork. And I was just there to witness this man's existence and to validate that even he matters, at least to me. And by the way, just imagine this. Apartment above your head with crack smoking, milk jugs filled with piss, a man with brown teeth and fungus feet, and below, they were making fucking pizza for people like me and you. And some beer. This is about my friend Gary.
Yeah.
It's called Gary's Goat. I see Gary at work, back in the storage room. His head is tilted, neck bent. He looks tense and pain. I say, Gary, what the fuck's wrong with your fucking neck? Gary can't turn his head towards me. He has to turn his whole body. I fell asleep on the couch last night after drinking a six-pack of beer. Fucking neck is all stiff now. Back hurts, too. Can barely move around. I say, you can't fucking stock groceries like that. You need your back cracked. And your neck, too, man. Gary is over 6 feet. I couldn't do it. I say, let's get Frank in here. He'll do it. Frank! Frank! We call out. Frank comes lumbering in like one of those fucking Bigfoot things. He's like 7 feet tall. I say, Frank, you big fucking Yeti shithead. Gary here has a problem. Frank is eating a sandwich. It's a gross looking thing. One of his bites takes out half of it. Doesn't chew. He just swallows it back. What's the problem? I'm on lunch for Christ's sake, Frank says, mustard all over his mouth. Put down that shit sandwich and crack Gary's back. He's all fucked. He spent all night on the couch like a bum. Now he's all retarded. Crack his neck too. Frank drops his sandwich and grabs Gary from behind. He lifts him up and tilts Gary's spine backwards over his chest. There's a loud snap and Gary grunts. And then Frank grabs Gary's head and, like a melon, twists it this fucking way and that. Snap, crack. Gary screams agony and drops to the floor into a spasm. We rush him to the hospital. The doctor drugs him up, takes x-rays or some shit. Some machine that takes pictures of the insides. Doctor says, I'm sorry to say this, but it appears your friend Gary here has a deformed goat growing in his shoulder. It's rare, but it happens. See, when Gary was a baby in his mother's womb, he had a twin. It was forming with Gary fine, but his twin, it got sick. And when that happens, the stronger twin will absorb the other one into his body. In most cases, it just turns into a benign tumor in the surviving twin's flesh. But here, eventually, Gary's twin turned into a mutant fucking goat. Like a parasite, it's now feeding on Gary, screwing his body all up. It sucks. Because Gary will surely die. It's science. Frank kicked a wastebasket across the doctor's office. I knew it, he said. What do we do now, Doc? Gary asked. Doc says, we got to kill you, Gary. So the goat will live. At least. Gary agrees, so that's what we do. Doc gives Gary an injection. He dies. We cry. Then the flesh of his shoulder rips open. A skinny, crooked goat comes out with two horns on one side of its head, eyes on top of each other vertically instead of side by side. He makes goat sounds. I ended up donating the goat to the petting farm at Butler, PA. For $1, you can pet it and feed it sardines. Kids love that goat. Gary always wanted kids. It's funny how things work out. You know, you laugh, but Gary was a good friend of mine. And it's very heartbreaking for me. All right, so these are like half finished, and they might, like Jimmy says earlier, you know, sometimes you gotta read clunkers. These might be very well be shit, but I'm gonna read them anyway. All right, so this one's called Bigfoot. She said, "What do you think about Bigfoot?" I said, "Bigfoot is real." She said, "Well, if he's real, why didn't they find him? No dead Bigfoots, no bones, no real evidence, no good photography or nothing." I said, "Because they got it all wrong. They're looking for a physical being here, like a bear or an ape. But Bigfoot is mystic. Bigfoot does not live in this realm. He just passes through. Excuse me, big feet, male and female. Big feet live in a different reality. Call it Bigfoot world, if that pleases you. And occasionally they pass through our reality because they have that power. They may leave a footprint here or there, but they don't live here with us, so we won't catch them or find their dead bodies. They've been passing through since humans started. Back then they probably stayed longer and talked to us, but now with all these cars and cameras and bombs and shit we have, they don't stick around as long anymore because they don't like us. They think we're kind of assholes, really." She said, "Yeah, well, why don't we have any good pictures of Bigfoot?" I said, "Because if you come from a different reality, a different dimension, our cameras, which were designed and constructed to catch images on this plane of existence, is not going to accurately photograph a being from another plane of existence. You can try, but it's going to be blurry. You know, and anyone claiming to have a real picture of Bigfoot is lying. That's just a guy dressed in a gorilla suit. But real Bigfoot, well, he's barely been photographed, if at all." And she said, "Where are you taking this fucking poem?" And I said, "To your lips, straight to your lips, then straight up your skirt, where we kiss this blue marble planet and make it glow its magical glow." And she said, "Yeah." Nothing turns me on like Bigfoot. Okay. All right. I apologize for putting you through this. Here's my last one, I think. It's another clunker. It's called Museum. I was born, and then roughly 14,000 days later, I am 37 years old listening to Beethoven at 2 a.m. My body is slumped, unshaven, pale belly protruding. Lots of things happened prior than 14,000 days ago. A good while back, Beethoven was alive and writing music, for example. Long before that, there were cavemen. And before that, dinosaurs. And before that, who knows? Everything ends up in the dirt. Beethoven, dead, rotted, dust. But also Beethoven pouring out of my speakers, very much alive. And the dinosaurs, they died too. Their bodies went deep into the ground and broke down into oil, which is now in your car, allowing you the miracle of driving a large vehicle around town while staring into your smartphone. But let's think about a museum for a moment, a big museum. T-Rex bones on display in a tall cathedral-like room where school children look up at this impossible creature that once was running around eating other creatures and having giant deranged lizard sex with other giant T-Rexes. No one would believe it if we didn't have the evidence. In another room, wax recreations of cavemen making a fire on display, frozen in place, a painted scenery of a rugged landscape around them. One time, those cave men and women were here, and they had their own problems. They had to wipe their asses with rocks. They had to run animals down and club them over the head just to eat. Their genitals were out and flapping around. But they had to work through it. Not only did they have to figure out how to survive other dangerous tribes trying to kill them, not only did they have to learn to cook food, preserve it, they also had to figure out how to properly cover their balls and vaginas. And there was a lot of problems with that. Bug bites, for example, and sunburnt penises. And again, just way too much flapping around. Okay, maybe I'm getting carried away with the caveman genital thing. So let's clear our heads for a moment. Okay, now let's take a look at a different part of the museum. It's up this long set of stairs. Here we see a wax recreation of a no-name man listening to Beethoven, slumped in his chair, unshaven at 2 a.m. He's writing a poem. It looks like he may smell. His belly is threatening to droop over his boxer shorts, but it's still managing to reject gravity for the time being. He had to figure things out too, like being a 37-year-old man with the bank account of a paperboy. And somehow managing to pay his bills. But he'll get by, and so will you. We are walking through a museum, looking at yesterday. Then one day, we are yesterday. Do something helpful for the people coming up behind us. Do something noble, like the cavemen who solved the whole exposed flapping dong problem. That's it. Thank you.